Dr. Crickley's office. Judy speaking. No. Is it? Oh, I know. Jenny Smith, a new mother. Well, how's the baby?
Vaseline Program, the only show in radio where the audience writes the script. And tonight, it is Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which contributes the winner, Scandal in the Fourth Dimension, by Amelia Reynolds Long of 725 South 25th Street. Gene Hirschold is starred as Dr. Christian, and Rosemary DeCamp plays Judy Price.
Well, I think Gerard is a lovely name for a boy, Jenny. Handsome as his dad, hmm? Oh, he's been unhappy. What's the... Oh, irritated skin. Oh, well, yes, that happens lots of times. The baby's skin is so sensitive. Uh-huh. Oh, I'm glad. Well, what did the doctor use? Vaseline petroleum jelly? I thought so. Oh, yes, of course. Vaseline petroleum jelly is ideal. Brings soothing relief to baby's touchy, chafed skin, especially in the little folds of skin where clothing rubs. Is it gentle, Jenny? Oh, it's a breeze. Uh-huh. And it's pure, too. You can use it just as freely as you like. And, Jenny, remember, Vaseline petroleum jelly does more than soothe. It forms a protective film to help keep out infection when the skin is broken. Yes, I noticed that. Vaseline petroleum jelly really promotes healing, too. It's grand, all right, Jenny, and not just for little Gerard's skin, but for yours, too, when it's safe. Oh, sure I have. Keep an extra jar for grown-ups? Well, it's a splendid idea. Vaseline petroleum jelly is so useful, anyway. Well, bring the baby in. We're dying to see him, Jenny. That'll be fine. Goodbye.
Now for the play, Scandal in the Fourth Dimension. And you may know from the title that here is another. One of those different stories. Cockeyed, maybe, but delightfully so. It begins, prosaically enough, however, in Dr. Christian's familiar office.
And I tell you, Dr. Christian, it's not fair. Alec Dale is a nice boy, and if Betty Barger wants to marry him, her father has no right to forbid her. Just because Alec wants to be an inventor when he gets out of the Army, old Grumpy, I mean Professor Boswell, thinks he's impractical. Why, some of our most practical men have been inventors.
Oh, you're right, Judy. I think young Boswell knows that, too. But once he's taken a stand about anything, he hates to back down. Then he didn't help matters either. The night he was laying down the law to Betty and Alec and pounded the top of his desk so hard with his fist that he broke a bone in his hand.
Oh, it served him right.
Oh, now, Judy, you don't mean that. But speaking of Professor Boswell, isn't that he coming off the walk now?
Hmm?
This is his day to have dressing on that hand changed, I believe.
It is. Put on your bulletproof vest, Doctor, or dig yourself a nice comfortable foxhole behind the bed.
No need to do either. His bark is a lot worse than his bite.
Dr. Christian, do you think that while he's here, you could manage to put in a word for Betty and Alec?
Well, I can try, Judy.
Hello, Dr. Christian. Hello, Judy.
Good morning.
I am due here this afternoon, I believe.
That's right, John. Now, how's the hand feeling today?
Oh, it could feel worse, I suppose, but then it could feel a lot better, too. This wouldn't have happened in the first place if it hadn't been for that half-baked young cub my daughter thinks she's in love with.
Sit down here and I'll take a look at it. Why do you dislike Alec Dale so much, John? He seems to me to be a fine young man.
He's a brainless young idiot.
He reminds me quite a bit of a roommate I used to have when I was in college. A brilliant young fellow named Aloysius O'Flanagan.
Aloysius O'Flanagan? Oh, Dr. Christian.
Oh, yes, Judy, yes. That was really his name. He was a science major, I remember, and particularly brilliant in mathematics. In fact, he was the star pupil of Professor Erasmus Stokes, head of the mathematics department.
Oh, Christian, you're making those names up.
Why, John, how can you accuse me of such a thing? A roll of bandits, please, Judy.
Yes, sir.
As I was saying, Aloysius was Professor Doak's star pupil. In fact, he not only turned in perfect classwork, but he frequently went to the professor's home to work with him on special theories and experiments and higher mathematics.
Playing up to the old boy, huh?
So it seemed at first, but When Aloysius appeared at the senior dance with the professor's very attractive daughter, Patsy, the mystery was explained.
No, not a presumptuous young colt, huh?
As I said in the beginning, John, Aloysius and Alec remind me a great deal of each other. But to get back to my story, Professor Doak's chief hobby was the fourth dimension, and he believed that objects in that dimension possessed invisibility.
Huh? Sounds screwy.
Yeah, maybe so, Judy. Anyway, when the professor insisted that the fourth dimension would have complete invisibility, he always won his argument. Nobody understood what he was talking about well enough to contradict him.
I can believe that.
For some time, Aloysius had been working with him in his search for the right mathematical calculation whereby a three-dimensional object could be made to demonstrate the fourth dimension. But whether it was because he believed in its possibility or because it enabled him to be near Patsy, it's hard to say. Then, one evening, he returned from the professor's house.
Oh, it's happened.
What's happened, Aloysius? Has Patsy promised to marry you?
Oh, not yet. The fact is, I'm afraid to ask her. I'm talking about Professor Doak's experiment. He's done it.
Discovered the fourth dimension?
And it's as he claimed. Invisibility.
Oh, I don't believe
it. But he vanished right before my eyes.
Aloysius, where were you before you went to the professor's house?
Oh, no, Paul. I never touched that stuff, honest. When I say he vanished, I mean it. By the application of certain mathematical calculations and formulae, a man can make himself...
Tell that to the freshmen. Maybe they'll believe it.
But it's true, I tell you. I saw him do it.
And was it true, Dr. Christian?
Of course it was. The only trouble was that when Professor Doak tried to explain it to his brother professors, none of them could understand it. The only person who was able to grasp it was Aloysius.
And he could demonstrate it too, I suppose?
Yes, John. Yes, he could. I'll never forget the first time he demonstrated his ability in public. A number of the boys at the fraternity house had been kidding him about what they called the professor's vanishing act. Aloysius didn't say anything, but after making some complicated calculations on a sheet of paper, he began to say, "Go out," right before our eyes. When he finally reappeared, no one said a word. But the next morning, three flasks were found in the trash barrel, and a boy who had been an atheist went out and bought a Bible.
This is beginning to sound good. What else happened?
And it was shortly after the incident at the fraternity house that Aloysius decided to speak to Professor Doakes about his feelings for Patsy. He approached the professor in his office one day after classes while Patsy waited outside in the hall.
Huh? Oh, it's you, old Flanagan.
Well, what can I do for you?
I'd like to speak to you about Patsy, sir.
Yeah, what about her?
I'd like to marry her.
You what?
I said I'd like to marry her, sir.
Have you any objections?
Not for you, Flanagan. I have no objection to you as a member of the human race. But as a son-in-law, well, that's quite different. How could you support a wife?
Well, you said yourself that I was in line for an instructorship as soon as I graduated here at the university.
And so you are. But you'll get it only if you put this other nonsense out of your head.
Well, but
now, don't argue, my boy. I know what's best for you and for Patsy.
Is that your final word, sir?
It is. Good afternoon, O'Flanagan.
Good afternoon, sir.
What did he say, Albie?
He said no.
I was afraid he would. Did he get mad?
No. If he had, there might be some hope for... But he was just, well, calmly obdurate, Patsy. And there's nothing in this world harder to lick than a calmly obdurate attitude.
I know it. But we're not giving up. We may get a chance to change his mind for him, even yet.
But a month passed, and the change did come. Then one evening, Aloysius and I were in our room, preparing for an examination, when the telephone rang.
He answered.
Hello?
Is that you, O'Flanagan?
Yes, sir.
This is Professor Doak. Can you come over at once?
Why, yes, of course, Professor. Is anything wrong?
Oh, something most embarrassing has happened. I can't explain over the telephone, but I'll tell you when I see you. You'll come at once, won't you?
Oh, I'm practically there now, Professor. Hello, Patsy. Your father sent for me.
Yes, I know, Albert. He's in the study. You'll see what's happened when you go in. And when you do, remember.
Good
This is our chance.
Okay, Patsy. I'll remember. Good evening, Professor Doak.
Oh, my dear old Saget. It is good of you to come so promptly. I have great need of you, my boy. I was in the act of passing into the fourth dimension in the course of an experiment when I made a slight miscalculation just as I was midway. Which unfortunately prevents my either going on or retracing my steps. You see what I mean as I rise and step from behind my desk.
Why, great heavens, Professor. You're late.
They're gone. Oh, not entirely, my boy. Merely stepped into the fourth dimension. But you see my unhappy state. Naturally, I can't appear publicly in this condition with any semblance of dignity. Therefore, I must ask your help.
Well, I shall be glad to help you, Professor. But it is generally accepted that the laborer is worthy of his hire.
What's that? Oh, as I see. Commercializing on your knowledge, eh? Well, it's not so bad, my boy, not so bad. After all, that is the main purpose of knowledge in this generation. What is your price?
Your daughter Patsy, sir.
What? Why, you impudent young scoundrel, you,
well,
you...
Good evening, sir. You know where to reach me in case you change your mind.
What happened, Alwick?
Oh, he wouldn't give in, Patsy.
But I'm holding out.
Good. He'll come around in the end. He can't go down indefinitely without any visible means of success.
However, capitulation was far from the professor's thought. For all practical purposes, his legs were as good as ever. If he could only avoid attracting attention until he had discovered his miscalculation, he'd be all right. The unfortunate part was that, being halfway into the fourth dimension, he was unable to start at the beginning of the process and search methodically for his error. He had to confine himself to the middle portion, which made the task most tedious and difficult.
He must have had trouble when it came to teaching his classes. How could he stand there and tell them that all of its parts are essential to the whole and expect him to believe it?
Oh, he solved that problem the first day by going early to the classroom and delivering his lecture while seated at his desk. But the second day, he forgot himself and rose to illustrate the point of the blackboard.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, in order to find the distance between the points A and B, neither, of course, which is accessible...
Oh, sorry.
Young lady, what is the meaning of interrupting my lecture with that undignified sound?
You've forgotten your lamp.
I... my infernal absent-minded is again.
The mischief was done. The story got around, and later that morning, it was with a feeling of loss that Professor Doak found himself in the presence of his team.
Professor Doak?
Yes, Dr. Starr.
Please make yourself comfortable, Professor. I suppose you understand why I sent for you.
My somewhat unusual physical condition, I suppose.
Precisely. Mm. My dear Doak, don't you think that some explanation of your rather extraordinary state should be forthcoming?
Well, you see, Dr. Sharp, it is due to slight error in my experiment. An error which I shall correct eventually.
Can't young old Flanagan help you? He seems to understand these experiments of yours.
Oh, Flanagan has refused to help unless I pay him his price.
And what is his price?
Well, that I must insist upon withholding, since it is a private matter of my own.
Very well. In that case, I can only ask that you make every effort to return to your normal state by tomorrow. Should you fail to do so, I shall be obliged to place your case before the provost of the university.
Professor Doak rose, or rather his torso floated to a higher level, and left the office. Ah, he was a worried man. He knew that his plight might cost him his chair at the university. But the only way out was to give in to the demand of Aloysius. His invisible legs stiffened at the thought. Meanwhile, the dean had sent for him.
Flanagan, Professor Doak has met with an accident in the course of his experiment. I believe that you could help him out.
Has he sent for me, sir?
No, he's not. Your aiding him was my own idea.
Well, I'm afraid, sir, that the professor wouldn't accept my services.
No, why not?
He's better able to tell you that himself, sir.
Well, Flanagan, I'll give you until tomorrow to help him out of his difficulty. If you fail to do so, I shall be obliged to remove your name from the rolls of the university.
That's the way it stands, Captain. If I give in, we lose our big chance to make your father consent to our marriage. If I don't, I get canned here at school.
Oh, let me think. I know. All of you think you'd have any friends who are reporting?
Well, sure. There's Bill Jones on the ledger and Ted Wilson on the world.
Why? Because they're going to help us get out of here. Started to test newspaper publicity. Now, you see?
Oh, Patsy. You're a wonder.
That afternoon, Professor Jokes was visited by two young men who asked a number of innocent questions about mathematics while he used their eyes to good advantage. The following morning, when the professor picked up his newspaper questions...
Oh, the infernal impudence!
What's the matter, Father?
Listen to this headline in the ledger. University professor discovers dimension of invisibility. Dipped his foot in it. No. And this one in the world. Noted professor legless in fourth dimension, but still kicking. Oh. And where do they get such stuff?
I really couldn't say, Father. There goes the phone. I'll take it. Hello? Just a minute. Here's the line, please.
Who is it?
It's a representative from the Motion Picture Company. He says this company will pay you $10,000 for your first dimension invention to use in fixed photography.
Oh, confound the fella. Hang up on it, Betsy.
I'm sorry. Professor Jokes says he isn't interested. Hello? I asked him, but I'm afraid...
No, what?
It's a vaudeville company. They want you to travel with them, and they're asking for a man in half.
Tell them to go to...
And the professor says no.
I'll take it this time. Well, what do you want? Oh, you deserve... Oh, that was the worst. It was so mysterious. Hello?
It's the doorbell. It's time, Father. I'll go.
Vaudeville. If I might find out he started it.
Here's a gentleman to see you, Father.
Well, what's your business, young man?
Mr. Jokes, I represent the Stone Kevin Press.
My what? Practice. Hold hold,
Professor. Right.
Is that thing a camera?
All right, you are, Professor. Now, just one more shot in case the first one doesn't turn out well.
Get out of here.
Before I go, Professor, I'd like to ask a question about clothing. Does it become visible when you take it off at night and invisible when you put it on again in the morning?
I don't care if I get my hands on you.
Wait a minute, Professor. Look out there.
Just let me catch you. That's all I ask.
There's a man halfway up that telephone pole, and another man at the foot of it swearing horribly, and the second man hasn't got any legs.
Oh, we're not getting here. Let me get through here, boss. Let me through here. Holy
mackerel. Come down here and fight like a man.
Yeah, my, you know, a gentleman like you disturbing the peace.
Oh, Aloysius, so Flanagan is responsible for this. I'll kill him.
I will see about that. You just come along with me now. Come on.
In a few minutes, it was all over. One policeman gripping the upper half of the professor, and another appearing empty-handed, but going through all the antics of a man trying to hold a bugging bunco, made her way to the patrol wagon. A few hours later, Aloysius was returning to his dormitory from the morning classes when he found a policeman there waiting for him.
Have you any wishes for Flanagan?
Oh, that's right.
But I don't own a car, officer.
Well, it's not a ticket I'm here to give you. What I want to know is, are you acquainted with an old guy named Erasmus Jokes that's supposed to be a professor here at the college?
Oh, Professor Jokes of the mathematics department? Yes, I know him.
Well, he's down at the station, charged with disturbing the peace, and he wants to see you. Come down and have a look at him. But you better not let him get his hands on you, or the charge might have to be changed to first-degree murder.
Okay, officer. I'll come.
Here he is, Mr. O'Flanagan. He promised to be here himself, but if he gets high, just yell for me.
No, I think everything will be all right, officer.
Okay, if you say so, but remember, I'll be right outside if you need.
Good morning, Professor Doak. You sent for me?
Yes, O'Flanagan, I did. As you will doubtless remember, I made a slight error in my fourth-dimensional calculations a few days ago, which has placed me in a somewhat embarrassing situation. While I could find a way out of my difficulty, if given time, circumstances demand that matters be remedied at once. Accordingly, I shall require your help.
Yes.
Okay? I shall, of course, recompense you in whatever way you may seek to see. Huh? Why, it was unconditioned to Randall. And we take a sedative like a general and set to work. And in a quarter of an hour, the professor had become his other man again. I suppose I don't need to add that Patsy's engagement to Aloysius was announced the following week.
Oh, no, you don't. And what's the moral of the story supposed to be, Dr. Christian? That a man only ends up by making a fool of himself if he tries to buck the younger generation?
Let's change that. It's that a wise man doesn't even try. After all, to say love will find a way, you know, in spite of, in spite of everything.
Well, maybe you're right at that. And maybe I have been a little hard on Alec Dale. Anyway, I'll think it over. And if you're finished bandaging this hand of mine, I'll be getting along. Goodbye, Doctor. Bye, dear.
Goodbye, Professor Boswell.
Goodbye, John, and, take it easy with that hand.
Dr. Kirsten, what a story you tell Professor Boswell. You didn't expect him to believe it, did you?
I think he believes them all, any duty. That's all that matters. John Boswell isn't an unreasonable man. He just doesn't like to change his mind without a reason.
And the curtain comes down on another Dr. Christian prize play with our star, Gene Herschold, waiting to greet you. Men, don't put up with dry scalp. If your hair is dry, unmanageable, if loose dandruff appears, if your scalp is tight and itchy, get right after any or all of those signs of dry scalp with Vaseline Hair Tonic. Yes, Vaseline Hair Tonic combats dry scalp, checks it easily, quickly, effectively. Vaseline Hair Tonic actually supplements natural scalp oils. Contains no alcohol or other drying ingredients. It works with nature, not against it. 5 drops a day, that's all. 5 drops of Vaseline Hair Tonic applied with comb or directly on the hair checks dry scalp, tames stubborn hair, keeps it perfectly groomed. Also, a brisk Vaseline Hair Tonic massage before each shampoo loosens dandruff, relieves itchy tightness. Remember, more bottles of Vaseline Hair Tonic are sold today than of any hair tonic in America. Vaseline Hair Tonic is one of the many Vaseline brand products made by the Teasville Manufacturing Company, owners of the trademark Vaseline. Get a bottle of Vaseline Hair Tonic tonight. Now here is Gene Herschold.
Thank you very much. Tonight's unusual story is the work of a well-known mystery story writer, Amelia Reynolds Long of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. She tells us she wrote this story first when a freshman in college. Now a message from the government to say the supplies of industrial scrap are far short of demand and need. It is therefore as important as ever for housewives to save waste scrap and turn it in promptly to their dealers. Next week, the candidate presents a new prize trade called Mr. Sourfoot by Evelyn Homer of Devon, Connecticut. We invite you all to listen again next Wednesday evening to the Vaseline program, same time and same place. And until then, I'll say good night.
Want a tip for chapped lips? Try Vaseline Lip Ice. Healing begins almost immediately. Only 10 or 25 cents at any drugstore. For quick relief, quick healing, Vaseline Lip Ice. Make a note now to be sure to listen to next week's Dr. Christian play, Mr. Sourfoot. You'll love it. I'm Gilmore Susan. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.